thank you for joining us. Myself, Khadija, as the chair of the Anti-Racist Curriculum Project, and my lovely colleague, Mia Lianege, who is the researcher for the Anti-Racist Curriculum Project. We're going to be in conversation around why we decided to call it the Anti-Racist Curriculum Project. So welcome, Mia. And I was just wondering if you want to say a few things about your role as a researcher for this subgroup.
Sure. Thank you, Khadija. We're hoping today that we can shed a little light on why we chose the terms that we did and have a really expansive discussion about terms and terminology and labels. So as the researcher for this project, it's my role to kind of collate existing resources around anti-racist curricula, to also speak to all the people who are in our working groups on the different sub-issues that are related to this project, and help to pull together everyone's different insights, wisdom, best practice, current practice, and in the end, aid Khadija and the rest of the executive group to produce a set of resources or our Getting Started guide about how to kind of do anti-racist curricula in the broader sense.
Yeah, and that's great, Mia, because it's so important. What we have noticed is there's some pockets of really good practice across the country, and in some cases we really need to provide some support. So it's about really collating all that's out there and begin to think about it from a very Scottish perspective as well.
No, I think that's crucial. And this project, I think I'm right in saying, is the first time that across Scotland we've attempted something this broad. And I think when it comes to anti-racist curriculum reform, it's something that we have to kind of be doing in step and doing together. I realise that I'm English, but I will do my best to bring my wisdom to the Scottish context.
Yeah, so Mia, one of the questions that I'm often asked when I'm speaking to particular agencies, particular institutions, is around what's the difference? You know, is there a difference between decolonizing curriculum or anti-racist curriculum? And my immediate answer, Mia, and I'm hoping you'll be able to come in from your project of decolonizing the curriculum, is really that colonization, I guess, was both predicated on and reinforced, from a racist perspective. If all British people learned about colonization, we would have a better collective understanding, I guess, of how race is constructed and used. And then actually what that would lead to is we'd be better equipped to challenge racism more effectively. So that, you know, outdated Eurocentrism, that Euro curricula that we have, no longer reflects actually, I think, the world in which our graduates will live in and work in. And that we must think about how that permeates within our university lecture theatres, classrooms, and so on. So it's really been some sort of a disagreement and misunderstanding around what that decolonizing curriculum should look like. I don't know what your thoughts are, because obviously your project was very much around using that terminology.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you've said, and I think it's such an interesting, I almost want to say a false dichotomy, right? Because actually anti-racism and decoloniality or decolonizing, they have a really kind of symbiotic relationship. And actually, I think that the ways in which the terms have been deployed and the context in which they've been deployed has been far more about a time period, a movement, etc., than it has been about there being a fundamental difference between the two terms. So for the benefit of folks watching, I wrote a report for HEPI, the Higher Education Policy Institute, that came out in summer 2020, which was called Miseducation, Decolonizing Curricula, Culture and Pedagogy in UK Universities. And the reason that I chose decolonizing for that project was largely for two reasons. The first is that the project that I did was not only about curricula, it was about, as I mentioned, culture and pedagogy as well. And I think in that way, there was a real sense for me that I wanted to put forward the idea of decolonizing as a process that affects every part of an institution. So it wasn't just around curricula. The second reason that I used it is because what led me to be in the position to write that paper in the first place was a long history of student activism and advocacy in Oxford, where I was a student. And in that context, especially because that set of movements began really with Rhodes Must Fall in the mid 2010s, decolonizing was the word. So that is what we were talking about, and that's how we centered our movements. And actually, it was only really, I have to say, in around summer 2020 when George Floyd was murdered and it re-kickstarted an entire movement, that the term anti-racist suddenly sprung up and became hugely, hugely important in student and HE spaces that I occupied, purely because we had been using the term decolonizing. So I was coming from a context where that was being used, but really, not to say that they don't have any differences, but I think the way that we deploy them is really with the same spirit in mind, which, as you said so eloquently, is the fact that, yes, we need to learn about colonialism in order to understand our current context, but the reason that is so important is because of the legacy of racism that it has left very potently in our societies and, of course, in our universities. So we chose anti-racism for, well, many reasons, I'm sure, of which you'll cover too, but we didn't choose it because we disagree with decolonizing, quite the opposite, given that that's my context.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And really for us as well, it was that challenging existing, so the anti-racist, whether we use decolonizing, whether we use anti-racist curriculum, for us, it was about that challenging existing scholarship of learning and teaching and, you know, pedagogic practices that I would say within higher education and within the college sector, reinforce whiteness through their knowledge, through their norms and behaviours, which actually I think doesn't fully prepare academics to consider anti-racist practices or the impact of their teaching on their diverse students, you know? So we really do need to be thinking about disrupting that and beginning to, I guess, through whether it's the anti-racist curriculum project, this idea of representation, what is it that we're actually trying to disrupt and interrogate, to reframe those conversations and reframe the way that we think about curriculum, the way we think about teaching, and how something is taught, and how much perhaps I think agency our students have within that, but with a very strong anti-racist consciousness and anti-racist lens that's applied to those discussions.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're just going to be saying that we can't agree more throughout this conversation, but I agree. And I think that one of the things that I, you know, at this point, I think probably constantly say, boring people to distraction around decolonizing, is that it's a process and it's not a destination, and that what it denotes is an approach and a spirit of reform. And I think that the way we've deployed anti-racist in this context is encompassing exactly the same feeling. And that when we use the term anti-racist to describe the curriculum that we're trying to kind of encourage and engender through this project, we're also choosing that term self-consciously, knowing the moment that we're in and knowing the, you know, I think it's, you know, hopefully not controversial to say, relatively new commitment from a lot of institutions to focus really, really carefully on this particular issue. So funnily enough, having just told my story about decolonization being the word of choice and that shifting in my own life and my own context, I think actually that also tells part of the story of why it was chosen, because the term anti-racist in relation to higher education has really exploded over the past few months. And so it's a really important nod, I think, to all of that work and that commitment to name the project thus. And I suppose it's also interesting, and this is something maybe you can talk a little more on, Khadija, but it's also important that it's called that because it ties into the wider Tackling Racism on Campus project and initiative that you, Nagette, and others have been spearheading.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for us, I mean, there's many aspects to it, but the very sort of three core aims I can immediately think about is this notion of improving diversity and representation, but, you know, across institutions and across the curriculum too, Mia. You know, and this is about, you know, oftentimes when we are presenting content as an academic myself, and I'm presenting content and knowledge and working with our students, it's about asking whose stories, you know, that I'm speaking about or I'm narrating, and who tells those stories. And that counter storytelling is so important to bring in the different lived experiences, isn't it? So it's about making sure that our BAME students and staff even see themselves reflected in the curriculum. And it's not just on a one-off occasion, it's that all year round. It's got to be a central part of it. And particularly, you know, when people say to me often, Khadija, what about, you know, decolonizing seems to lend itself well to social sciences, but what about other curricular areas? And when you think about, you know, history lessons, for example, you know, it might be that you're thinking about, you know, Tudors, but thinking about including Black Tudors, or, you know, thinking about mathematics and the origins of some of the formulae from maths, so the Arabic origins of algebra, you know. But for me, really, it is about those that re-examining how we have been teaching Western colonial from that very lens, I guess. And really what it's important is about, and I think the other misconception is folk automatically think, right, let's have a look at our reading material, let's have a look at the content in that sense, but isn't necessarily changing what you teach as well, but how you teach it, you know. So for example, the most obvious one that I come across is the teaching of the British Empire, let's say, yeah, and we need to teach it as it was invasive and exploitative rather than exploring and settling, because we often get a different perspective shared. And so therefore then that goes beyond what we want to discuss, that criticality of reading and thinking. So teaching explicitly, I think, about racism and anti-racism, both past and present within our curriculum, within our institutions, is really important.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it really is crucial to underline the point that you just made about this being an approach to teaching and learning, not merely about content. You know, if we add certain like authors of color to a reading list, but we don't change the way in which we analyze things we put on our reading lists, then we won't gain from those pieces of literature or scholarship the perspectives that they might be intending us to take away, because we'll still be viewing them through a certain lens. Now, one of the things that people have often spoken to me about is, you know, I get that we want to add these perspectives, or I get that we want to change things, but it's so hard to see the wood for the trees when you're within that mindset. So how do you step out? And one of the things I say is that the initial sense of humility and commitment and understanding and self-awareness of where your positionality is always the first step to that, which is part of why this particular ARC project we are doing relates so strongly to various other projects that fall both under and beyond the Tackling Racism on Campus umbrella, because that umbrella is about interrogating positionality and racist structures across all of the kind of parts of the university. So the hope is that you become more self-aware about your own positionality, you then take a step back from what you teach and how you teach it, and of course then also lend resources and time to doubling back and going back to a lot of the scholarship that has been done. you know, people have done so much incredible anti-racist slash decolonial scholarship. It's just that it's not being properly recognized. And part of the reason that my job even exists is to collate and curate some of that best practice so that it's easier to access. The other thing on that point that comes to mind for me is that when we talk about things like, say, decolonizing the sciences or, you know, creating anti-racist curriculum in the sciences, again, I think people think, as you mentioned, Khadija, they think that we can't access the kind of anti-racist spirit behind some changes we could make in those subjects because it seems like, well, this knowledge that we have is objective. And I think actually, and now I think of it, this is something that maybe I should focus on in the kind of glossaries that we'll produce around this issue, but the myth of objectivity in scholarship and in pedagogical and academic work is huge, actually. And if we interrogated what objectivity meant, then it would shed so much light on all of the decisions, pathways, privileges that led certain people to certain points. You know, the fact that our scientific knowledge, you know, our medical knowledge, for example, around things like BMI, something which is supposedly objective, BMI actually has an incredibly racist foundation and thus isn't actually a very effective measure for anyone apart from Caucasian males. But that's not something that we're taught, and the effects of something like BMI are huge across people's actual lives and the medical treatment they receive. So it's a good example of how thought that becomes seen as objective has not only an impact on curricula, which can seem quite ethereal at times, actually trickles down and has a huge effect on people's real lives. Yeah, it's important stuff.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, currently in my own institution, Mia, we're looking at a new curriculum framework. And within that, it very much speaks to this notion of making sure that our curriculum relates to the lived experiences of our students and how we're going to do that as a staff. And it's really important for us to consider. And you touched on the idea of objectivity. And for me, when we think about curriculum, that objectivity will actually help us to perhaps think about what a broad and what constitutes a broad and balanced education or curriculum for that matter. And that's really important, isn't it? Because where we do present other world perspectives, where we are thinking about, you know, are we highlighting the silence around I'm coming back to British imperialism and racism in the British education system, as well as the lack of histories from around the world. So, those different voices, centering them, broadening that perspective, because actually what happens is when we fail to do that and we become subjective with what we're presenting, then that for me, I think, almost leads to a lack of, dare I say it, Mia, honesty and transparency in the education that we'll be offering to the next generation, in a sense. So for us, it's so important that the curriculum that we are, for our young people in schools, within college, within university, it's understanding the inequalities, the historical inequalities. But also, I think for me, I always come back to this sense of belonging. You know, so whether it is at universities or colleges, whether it is home students, and our home students, certainly not a homogeneous group. So our BAME home students, our international students who are coming to our campuses, they have to find that sense of belonging within the institution. So again, how does that manifest when we think about our curriculum? And ultimately what we're trying to do here is challenging racism.
Yeah. Yeah, and it has, you know, as we've both been saying, it has those real world effects. I think one of the most powerful things about choosing and naming anti-racist curriculum as such an important goal, it's the goal of this whole project, is it actually comes back to something you said a few minutes ago about voices and which voices are kind of valued and heard. That's not only true within the content of our curricula and even the pedagogy of our curricula, it's actually true in the makeup of our institutions and the experiences of the people in them. And for many people, it is only recently coming to light and must be, for those who weren't previously aware of it, quite disturbingly coming to light, the sheer force of lack of belonging and of alienation that quite a lot of people, specifically in this context, people of colour from various backgrounds, have experienced in their institutions. You know, it's actually huge. And one of the things that my report for HEPI tried to do was to present voices that aren't normally heard because people don't feel they're in a safe enough space to discuss these things or whatever. And it's actually that same spirit that really kind of excited me about this particular project, is that through the working groups that we have, we are, at least I sincerely hope we are, providing safe and open spaces for those practitioners and those leaders to talk about their own experiences and their own challenges. It's only through truly understanding those that we can approach anti-racist curricula and indeed the broader decolonizing of our institutions and our societies. It's only then that we can really understand not only how to do that, but also why it matters. And I really sort of sympathize with people who find it difficult to understand why this matters, because if you don't understand truly why something matters, then of course you're not going to put resources behind it, or of course you're going to be focusing on other things that have a value that is more inherently understandable to you. So part of our aim is absolutely to bring voices to the fore that not everyone has had the privilege, and it is a true, like, you know, not in the kind of socioeconomic understanding of privilege, but a true kind of moral and emotional privilege to hear the voices that haven't been spoken. And through doing that, we really gain our sense of purpose, I think, and a sense of why improving that sense of belonging is, well, so important for everyone, but so important for those students in particular and staff.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're really hoping that this subgroup and the starter guide that we're hoping to complete will be a really useful resource for our colleagues across the institutions, because I'm sure within every institution they will have similar conversations as the one that you and I are having just now. And I think it's important, I think that's probably the important thing to say here, is have the discussions, have those real, critical, honest conversations, and share that perhaps you may not quite understand what that means or what that looks like, because it's only then that we're going to be able to begin to think of an action plan to take that work forward. And some universities here within Scotland have certainly embarked on that journey. And there are, I suppose, many institutions where perhaps people think that they're following a decolonized agenda. And I worry sometimes, Mia, I wonder, you know, my kind of perhaps parting thoughts here will be that I sincerely hope that the starter guide will support our colleagues. And that's why we have yourself supporting us within the group. But also, I'm mindful that we must all ask ourselves this question, that we need to be careful about how we interpret the sort of decolonial agenda. We need to think about all the widespread calls to decolonize our universities and make sure that in the process we don't inadvertently I suppose what I'm trying to say is we, in the process of trying to dismantle whiteness, I guess, we don't want to go and further embed it within that and continue to characterize, I guess, the careers, the emotional well-being and daily lives of, you know, BAME staff and students within our institutions.
Yeah, I mean, my parting thoughts really are similar. And I think one of the most powerful things that came out of my research is that despite and including, you know, everything we've said about the importance of belonging and the importance of changing experiences of students and staff, what anti-racist curricula actually do is they completely transform the ways in which every single person who interacts with them learns, experiences, and then takes those learnings and experiences forward into their work in the world. So what we're really working towards is, yes, of course, we're working towards a world where, you know, people of color within institutions aren't being discriminated against, but we're also working towards a world where the learnings that that kind of results in, or the anti-racist curricula result in, are actually hugely beneficial and transformative for everyone of every race, every class, every gender, etc. That's really what we're trying to get to. And that is really the message that I sincerely hope everyone's able to get from what we produce from this project.
Yeah, yeah. And perhaps one last thing, that's really powerful, Mia, thank you. I'm obviously very aware that sometimes race within an EDI agenda, particularly with institutions talking about a decolonized curriculum, an anti-racist curriculum, it will feature in every EDI agenda. Well, I would probably argue that it absolutely has to be in every committee's agenda within institutions, talking about what that looks like, what that how they will go about trying to begin to think about what their curriculum will look like, what their ethos perhaps within the institution will look like. So it's really important to make sure that we sustain the dialogue and we have those repeated conversations, particularly with our senior leaders. And I think that's really going to help to drive that agenda forward. Yeah.
Couldn't have put it better.